Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shoplogia.org. Shop L-O-G-I-A.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shoplogia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shoplogia.org. Time for a little response to some of your comments on the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday afternoon, February the 1st. We'd like to respond to those who, any time of day or night, give us a call at 618-223-8382. That's the Issues Etc. comment line. It's set up especially for our listeners who have questions, comments, criticism, show suggestions, just want to chime in, want to further the conversation as the conversation continues, whether they're listening live or they're listening on demand. It's all there for them, 618-223-8382. And we try to respond to as many of the comments there as we possibly can. First up, a comment about our series with Pastor Will Wheaton on the historic liturgy.
This is Paul in Milwaukee suggesting an extension of the Part 21 of the Issues Etc. series on Lutheran liturgical practices with Pastors Wheaton and Wilkin, broadcast recently. Could Issues Etc. just briefly explain the distribution practices of other church bodies that claim Christ and the reasons for what they do? Is there one book or article recommended for the layman that discusses this matter beyond which Issues Etc. can afford time-wise to devote to the matter? I have been in a Reformed church, for example, where the bread and grape juice was passed out to the congregation seated in their rows. This was out, as I recall, much of an explanation as to what was being done. Incidentally, when these materials were passed, I passed on them. Thanks for listening.
Well, I've been in exactly the same position as well. Now, I don't know that that fits. It's a great suggestion, by the way, but I don't know if it fits properly within the historic liturgy series that he's referring to. We are now on part 21, going on part 22. We might have a part 23, I'm not quite sure, of our series on the historic liturgy with Pastor Will Wheaton, which you can listen to all of the previous 21 parts at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. We've been doing it not on a weekly basis, but trying to keep it as close to a weekly basis as we can. And we just started in and said, however long it takes, it will just keep going on this. So it's a fantastic, I would say, extremely in-depth series. We did a series on the historic liturgy years ago that was in-depth. This one makes that look like it rather shallow, even though it wasn't. And we're trying to focus here in that series on where we got this, what does this confess, why do Christians worship this way historically? Answering those basic questions, going through the divine service part by part. Now, I think we could very well do a series on communion practice, on closed communion, on open communion. Those are your only two options historically. You either got closed communion or open communion, that is, everybody communes, or you have some kind of boundary drawn around the fellowship of the Lord's table. We could do something on that. In fact, trying very hard to get Pastor Paul McCain on the program because he wrote something just this last week for his blog Cyber Brethren on closed communion. Probably, for what it dealt with, the best thing, hands down, I've read in years on closed communion. So we're going to try and address those issues, just not in the historic liturgy series. We're trying to stay with the liturgy, an introduction to the liturgy, an in-depth historical study and theological study of the liturgy there. It's a great suggestion, and we'll try and get a show on communion practice. And, you know, I don't know how I'd explain the practices of other congregations and other confessions of faith, except to say if you don't believe it's Christ's body and blood, it will be reflected in your practice. If you deviate from Christ's institution, like grape juice and bread instead of bread and wine, it will be reflected in your practice. And I think there's a theological explanation for those differences in practices. Why is it casually dealt with? Why is it not surrounded with the reverence and the loud confession and scriptural basis that we find in the historic liturgy in congregations that don't believe that Christ's body and blood are truly there. Well, they think they're just eating bread and drinking wine. They don't hear Paul's words where he says, look, this isn't your meal. This is the Lord's meal. And it just goes to show as a matter of general principle that what you believe on Sunday morning determines what you do. And you cannot say a Lutheran congregation, well, you know, we're going to commune a little more like the Baptists. The Baptists commune the way they do because they believe the way they do. So what you believe determines how you practice, and how you practice betrays what you really believe.
This is Herman commenting on the sermon on issues, etc., by President Matthew Harrison, and given at the church at Virginia on the occasion of the March for Life. I appreciate that in his remarks, he opened up a wider picture of the resistance to the Nazi policies in Germany. And that was very important. I certainly heard behind him the work and research of Dr. Lowell C. Green, who wrote the book Concordia Publishing House has issued, Lutherans Against Hitler, and possibly other sources. But I think that was very important to do, certainly to Lutherans and the public, to give a wider picture of Lutheran opposition to the Nazi policies. I think Dietrich Bonhoeffer has become a cliché. And I think it was much needed to get to a larger picture and fact of history that has been overlooked too long. And that was an important opening and start there. And I know that one of your guests, Uwe Simonetto, has attempted to make a similar widening of history on these matters, too. I think that was a very good. And I hope that that type of emphasis continues in historical review here. It's very needed. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you as well. And it was our pleasure to bring that sermon preached on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade by Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to our listeners during a sermon review. You can hear it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, and it's right there as you scroll down. Just look for a guy with a big mustache, and that's the sermon review, the first one you come to on the Listen on Demand page. I don't want to discount Bonhoeffer. Okay, has he become popularly something of a cliche? The answer is, yeah, you're right. But Bonhoeffer himself, his actions, I don't think we should discount them. It's a very serious subject. We talked with Eric Metaxas. He wrote a tremendous biography, I believe, on Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And there are a lot of reasons why Bonhoeffer kind of became a darling of evangelicals. But let's not discount his resistance. But principled, conscience-based, and Lutheran resistance to Nazism on all different levels doesn't begin and doesn't end with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as great as his contribution was, as great as his sacrifice was, as valuable as what he's left to us has been. And so those lesser known names, some of which Pastor Harrison introduced in the kind of the opening illustration of his Roe v. Wade sermon there in Washington, D.C., we need to get to know those people. Not only get to know them, because, wow, wasn't it nice that some of us Lutherans were standing up against, if it's just to beat our chests and wave our flags, then we're wasting our time. We need to listen to those people. We need to read what they were writing and what they were saying, because I think the whole point of citing them in that sermon was we can learn something from these people who some survived Nazism only through Dachau, some didn't survive Nazism, but they were willing to resist, not only on moral grounds, not only on political grounds, but even more so on theological grounds. So we can learn an awful lot from those lesser-known names, I agree. Here's a program suggestion from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yes, this is Christopher from Madison Heights, Michigan. I believe you ought to do a program on mental illness. Those of us who have mental illness and who take medication for it are isolated and lonely. people who do have mental illness have no incentive to go for help or report it, because people already notice that there's something different about people like me and avoid us. And if we say we have mental illness, they'll even avoid us even more. A person with mental illness has no incentive to say anything about it, because they get isolated even more than they are already. And it would really be good if you guys would do a program on it, and the need for the church to be more welcoming and loving towards people who have mental illness or behavioral problems. Thank you.
Well, Chris, you're preaching to the choir when you're talking about that with me, because, and rightly so, I completely agree with you. I can think right now of someone who'd make an excellent guest for our program, and she's been on many times. Dr. Beverly Yonke is a specialist in this area, and she's a no mean lay theologian as well. And you're right, there is still a stigma attached to much of mental illness. Even from depression through bipolar disorder and all the different classifications there, they exist. They exist in abundance among Christians and Christian congregations, and they do often isolate people. They do often go undiscussed, not just in kind of the church's general conversation, but undiscussed by those who suffer them or the families of those who suffer them. Look, there's no place whatsoever in Christ's body for any stigma attached to the effects of sin. If someone broke their leg, we wouldn't say, ooh, I don't know if we want them to come to church, or, you know, they're in Bible class, that makes me a little bit uncomfortable. If someone had cancer, we wouldn't do that. So when it comes to let's put it kind of bluntly, diseases of the mind, as they used to talk about them, they used to think about these things. There is no room in the body of Christ for any kind of stigma attached to the effects of our sin. And these things, mental illness, are like all the other maladies of mind and body that we suffer in a fallen world, are among those. And so we welcome all with the gospel. And you're right, we ought to do a show on it. We'll put it on the list. All right, that's it for Hour 1 of Issues, Etc., Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. We'll talk about women in combat, and then we'll play Issues, Etc., Soundbite of the Week.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.